Hey,
you're listening to Avid Research.
Avid Research.
Avid Research.
An Australian STEM podcast.
Where we answer the questions you never quite got around to asking.
Welcome back to the show, team. My name's Amelia, and today we are just doing probably a short-ish little Amelia rant introduction back to Avid Research for 2024, what a bit of the plan is for the year, and a diabetes update as well. So it has been a little while. Turned out a longer break was needed over summer to the point where it's now no longer summer. But interviews have re-begun, which is cool. It's really lovely to be talking to some very passionate people again. And so, like, some interviews will be coming your way shortly. So if you are interested in coming on Avid Research to talk about your research, your work, the things that you do, your career path, drop me a line. I'm contactable through a wide range of media platforms, and it would be great to chat to you and share what you've been up to. And that goes out to people who've been on the show, but like, it's been a couple of years as well. I think it's really cool to have a bit of a follow-up and see what you've been up to since then. So the other project that I'm trying to look at this year is bringing back the career maps and trying to work out some other ways of sharing them with people and with you. So my aim is to come up with something, hasn't been quite worked out yet, that will help you build out your own career map, because I think that would be really cool for people to be able to do. I'm not the like sole holder of career maps, and yeah, I think it'd be really, really valuable for people to be able to make their own career maps in their own time. So for those people who are new and don't know what a career map is, I had an exhibition of career maps back in 2021 at the Melbourne City Library, and it was about 20 maps of people who'd been on the show. And essentially, a career map is just a way of showing your career journey in a non-linear fashion. So not in that cold, somewhat detached, somewhat sort of like sanitized version of your CV that a CV is, or that LinkedIn is, the cold linearity of LinkedIn. Nope, career map is showing your entire journey and hopefully including those things that you try and sort of erase, but that were actually really important to your career journey. So things like you met someone and you moved to the country that they're from, and you did that not because it was good for your career, but because you really, really liked that person. Or maybe you were made redundant, and that's something that you obviously like try to keep off your CV because people can be really judgy about that, but it's actually a really important part potentially for you of your journey. So yeah, looking at how to show career maps and get people making their own career maps and sharing them, because our careers are much more than the jobs that we do. They're influenced by more, and also the things outside of our jobs actually influence what we're good at in our jobs as well. So yeah, really important to find a bit of a combo of all of those things. Yeah, so currently working on that. If you're interested in career maps, if you're interested in like different ways of like how they could be delivered or something, again, get in touch. I'd love to chat to you. Yeah, I'm going to try doing some experiments with showing how I make a career map as well. So coming down the line, all moving a bit slower than I had hoped, but that is often life, and that's how projects work. So fear not, though, new episodes are still coming. Avid Research still exists. There is probably some tech housekeeping that I need to do because all the code base is really old and kind of held together with sticky tape, but it hasn't fallen over yet. So maybe if it's don't broke, don't fix it. Not broke, don't fix it. Not sure. Anyhow, so yeah, they're the things that are happening. My Science May, SciComm September, we'll have some discussions about them, see if they are worth bringing back. It's a little bit hard at the moment because there's no clear social media platform that everyone's on. Where are you? I suspect what a lot of people have done is log out of Twitter, sorry, X, and then not logged into anywhere else. And that's like making it a little bit difficult to reach new audiences. But that's life in the modern day. So, yeah. But I guess that's a call out to you, dear listener. If you think this is a podcast that could benefit someone, please do share it, because they're deeply unlikely to stumble across it just because of how stumbling works these days. I'm going to try being more active on LinkedIn, I guess, this year, because everyone's like, LinkedIn is going to be the place to go. And there is like an overlap because it's about STEM and it's about careers, but it's also... Anyhow, we'll try. So stay tuned, follow the email newsletter. That's the best way of making sure you actually get any kind of update. That's when I write the newsletters. And yeah, if you want to come on the show, let me know. If you want to do like a follow-up where you are 2 years later, etc. I think that's really interesting because our lives are pretty dynamic, and an interview with Avid Research definitely isn't where people's like lives get paused. Okay, so on to a little bit of a diabetes update. I have been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes now for like 8 months or so. And as I mentioned before, it's like a pretty steep learning curve, possibly the steepest learning curve of anything I've done in my life. And I have learnt a lot during that learning curve. I've applied a lot of that learnings, and now I'm starting to like hopefully start sharing what I've been learning with people. I think it's really interesting because it's such a complicated system that as a person you're sort of playing a part within, and there are so many misconceptions. You could do like podcasts and podcasts that are just about misconceptions, both like external misconceptions about the type 1 diabetes like community and about people who have type 1 diabetes, any diabetes. There is no shortage of misconceptions, but also just like within the community, people are really wrong about a lot of things, and that's quite interesting. Yeah. Anyhow, we're not going to get into that right now. The thing that I did want to talk about, though, is the technology that I am using to manage my type 1 diabetes. And yeah, as someone who is quite tech curious, I'm really interested in what's available both in Australia and overseas, because what's overseas might eventually trickle its way here. Things do move a little bit slower medically in Australia. But yeah, so there's two primary pieces of technology that I use, and then a couple of like ancillary bits and bobs. One is a continuous glucose monitor. So specifically, I currently use a Dexcom G6. So Dexcom is the brand, and G6 is like the level or the model. The model that I'm currently using, because that's the one that's available in Australia. The G7 is available overseas at the moment, and we are sitting here waiting for it to come. Why? Because it uses less packaging. That's why I'm excited about the G7. Anyhow, so Dexcom, like really all the continuous glucose monitors, is a little tiny plastic limpet that you attach to some part of your body. Predominantly, I wear my Dexcom on my abdomen, so on my belly, and it has a little filament, not a cannula, a filament. So it's not putting anything into my body, it's just sensing what is going on in me. And so that filament sits in my, and I'm going to try and get this word right, forgive me, it's a really hard word to say, interstitial fluid. So like it's like the fluid in around the cells. So it's not sitting in blood, right? So this is not a blood glucose monitor. Very important. It's a continuous glucose monitor. And there is a very important difference. So the little filament is sitting there in, I don't know, the squidgy stuff between the cells. I'm not a biologist. I didn't study 12 biology. I regret that. And it is constantly sensing what the glucose levels are in that location, right? So it is a proxy. So it's not directly the same as your blood glucose. It's a proxy for your blood glucose. And it tends to lag by sort of, it cannot lag if your blood glucose isn't changing much. It can be the same, but it can lag by sort of up to around 15 minutes, maybe, depending on how quickly things are changing. But yeah, it's a cool piece of tech. It's an interesting piece of tech. It then sends me a number every 5 minutes and an indication of whether or not it thinks my glucose levels are static. So I get like a level little arrow that says it's like staying the same-ish, whether it's heading up fast, heading up super fast, heading down fast, or heading down super fast. It does its best with the arrows. You don't want to bet money on the arrows. You know, it's technology, it's doing its best for a really complicated system. But yeah, don't bet money on, like, if it says it's going down, it might go down, but it also may not. And just because it says it's flat doesn't mean it's not slowly going down. So, but yeah, so that piece of technology is really useful because one, it can like alert me if I'm heading dangerously high and in some realistic and more importantly, dangerously low. And so it can set off alerts on my phone. And we also have another device called a Sugar Pixel, which will alert if it drops particularly low, because after a while, after enough beeps on your phone, you'll sleep through it. And sometimes you need a plan B to sort of like say, catch you if you're going to sleep through your alerts. So that's my blood glucose monitor. It's like sending numbers up into the clouds, the cloud. And then like we can access it. And we've built a couple of devices around the house that are able to access that data and show it to us all the time. Personally, I have found it really valuable, essentially, to be overexposed to continuous glucose numbers. It's helped me identify patterns, and it's also helped me remove like any kind of shame from my numbers not being what they should be. And also to notice that just because the arrow says it's going down doesn't mean that the next reading will be down, etc. So for me, it's been really beneficial to have the numbers around and just to be able to detect patterns and act on like glucose levels dropping low before you hit a low. Yeah, obviously that wouldn't necessarily work for everyone, but because there can be a huge amount of anxiety around the numbers, because it's a number and we judge ourselves based on numbers often. Yeah, it's been really beneficial to essentially overexpose myself to those numbers, to the point where now we've all made the mistake of seeing like a 7.5 and interpreting that in our heads as 7:30, because these things look like little clocks. And yeah, it's really easy to start getting to the point where you confuse your glucose levels with the time, which is, to me, it feels healthy, but who knows? Anyhow, so at the moment, that Dexcom data isn't integrated with the insulin that I get. That is available overseas for the system that I'm currently using, and it's currently with the TGA. So we're waiting to have it sort of be like a smart system where it's talking to the devices talk to themselves. So the second device is a newie for me. I started on it early December. It is an insulin pump and I'm currently using an Omnipod Dash. So that's the Omnipod that is available in Australia. Omnipod 5 is available overseas. Omnipod is unique in Australia in that it is a tubeless insulin pump. Essentially, it's a disposable insulin pump. And I think one of the things that's quite cool, interesting about type 1 diabetes is that because there's enough people and there's enough technology, there's enough companies that are involved, you can actually get to choose the device, the insulin pump, the CGM within like what's available in the country. You actually get to choose that. There's a number of conditions out there. Like if you have something, you know, a pacemaker put in you, for example, I don't believe you get to choose which brand of pacemaker you get, but when it comes to insulin pumps, we get to choose. It's like sometimes, like I had to convince my endo and diabetes educator that this was the right choice for me, being like heavily researched and having a lot of data to back you up helps, but you still have a choice. And I think within like a medical field, that's actually really kind of cool and really empowering that you get to choose something that aligns better with your lifestyle. So the pump that I'm currently on is tubeless. So, I mean, it still has a tube. It has a cannula that puts insulin into me. seems really important, but it doesn't have like the cable tube, right? Which a traditional insulin pump is like basically like a little MP3 player style size thing. For those of you who remember MP3 players, that has a vial of insulin in it, that it has a tube that probably has like a technical word, and then it goes to the cannula that goes in you, right? So benefit of that is you can move the pump around and put it in your pocket, that sort of thing. Downside of that is I feel like it means you need to wear pockets or like a belt that like the pump can sit on. And often these pumps, you actually need to pull out the pump to like give yourself the insulin. And that means being able to access the pump, which means being able to get two things. So for me, as someone who catches like my pockets on door handles, the thought of having a cable attached to me that was like plugged into me that I would just catch on things is terrifying. I assume people work out how to deal with it. But yeah, so at the moment I've chosen to go with an Omnipod. That said, I'm going to try and get involved in clinical trials where I can trial other types of insulin pumps so I can see, you know, whether or not my assumptions about what works for me actually is working particularly well for me. But yeah, so it's a disposable pump. So it's a little sort of plastic limpet that you put on the squidgy bits of yourself, and then you try and rotate locations, etc., so you don't build up scar tissue. And yeah, every 3 days, fill a little buddy with insulin, limpet it to you, and then you control it using a second like phone-like device. Like I said, it doesn't talk to the CGM yet in Australia. When everything else, like all the new stuff gets approved and the new sort of wave of tech comes into Australia, they will be able to talk to each other. And so some of the background stuff will be automated, which is kind of cool. But yeah, so they're the main pieces of technology that I am currently using to manage my diabetes. I think it's quite interesting. And I think it's really interesting how quickly like things change and new tech is coming out and new ideas are coming out. One of the weaknesses that I found is that Omnipods will crack on exposure to sun cream. Specifically, I think chemical sunscreen. Anyhow, experiments will be undertaken by me on my windowsill to see like what it is that is causing Omnipods to crack. That's a whole other story. So that's the technology I'm using, Dexcom Omnipod at the moment, subject to change because change sometimes is like the holiday that you need. Yeah. Overall, type 1 diabetes, still wouldn't recommend. It's pretty tough. It doesn't give up. There's some really tough weeks where things just don't do what you think they should do. Your blood glucose is just a bit like the scattered slippery fish. These things happen. And yeah, so as always, high five your pancreas if it's still producing insulin because it's doing a good job and it's awesome. Okay. The benefit, I really want to say it like that, but one of the things that I have decided largely because of Avid Research to get involved with is research into type 1 diabetes. So as a participant, not as a researcher, right? So a little lab rat. And there's a number of really interesting clinical trials happening in Australia, really all the time around type 1 diabetes. There's just, while we've like got so far with technology and it's amazing, the technology sometimes obviously creates its own problems, as anyone with a printer will understand. Yes, you can print, but can you really print all the time the way that you wanted in the color that you wanted? Technology gives and it takes. And so there's also still a lot of things that they don't know about type 1 diabetes, and they won't really tell you what it's caused by because they don't really know yet. And yet we're still, as people, legit working towards a cure, which is amazing. And, you know, that's kind of cool. So clinical trials, I got involved with them because it feels like a way that I can give back to the community, and not just the diabetes community, but also to the research community who've been so supportive of this podcast. And so I did a trial that was looking at like a new type of sensor, a new blood glucose monitor, a brand that's not available in Australia yet. For some reason, the experiment's happening. Well, the trial, sorry, not experiment. The trial is happening in Australia. And so I wandered around wearing a total of 4 blood glucose monitors for 2 weeks. They got a little ratty towards the end, and I was sort of like, oh, how much tape is going to be needed to hold these little buddies on, because they don't really want to stay on. But that was really interesting, and mostly because I got to spend time with diabetes researcher nerds who really know what they're doing and know what they're talking about. And I got to pepper them with questions for long periods of time. That trial involved going in to Melbourne and doing some fasted, like, breakfasts, basically. And the purpose is to see if they can catch your, well, I mean, obviously they're going to catch it, but yeah, to try and get your blood glucose to do a nice up and then go down. And so they can, like, see how well the new sensors tracking against that rise and fall. So what that involved is me not having any tea or coffee until 8 a.m., which was so tough. That's how much I love science. And then you get cannula put in so that they can take blood, because blood is, like, the best way of actually checking. So they've got...
Oh, my God.
So they've got, like, plasma, blood... bloodlets? Something in the blood that they were checking against. They had, like, actual blood glucose monitor readings, which is what I got to see. I won't get to see the blood stuff. And then they've got their sensor readings as well. So they can sort of, like, do a bit of correlation and see, oh yeah, it's lagging, or it's, like, completely off, or it's, like, bang on. And yeah, so I did that 4 times, went in, fasted, and ate the food that they gave me, and then sat there for sort of, I don't know, 6 hours, having my blood taken every 20 minutes. But it's okay, because they have Wi-Fi, because they've thought about this. And they were all really, really lovely, and I got to ask lots of questions. So totally recommend being involved in clinical trials if you have sort of anything, really, because you can find out from the people who are at the cutting edge what's going on. And you can also give back. So that was one of the trials. There's other, like, pump trials and things coming up. There's a lot of that's happening around exercise, because exercise for people with type 1 diabetes is often complicated, because it's really easy to make your blood glucose drop and hypo while exercising. I'd say it's harder not to make your blood glucose drop. Yeah, so there's a lot of research happening around that. I also did, like, the world's tiniest trial looking at whey protein isolate and the effect of that on your blood glucose level overnight, which was really interesting. Spoiler, it like, whey protein, well, protein will make your blood glucose rise, but, like, in a much more gentle way than carbohydrates. And they're going to look into that to see if that can be used to help avoid hypos during exercise. I think it's got a lot of other potential too, though. Anyhow, so clinical trials are fun, technology is cool, type 1 diabetes, do not recommend, but it's still really interesting. And so that is really the story. We've got actual interviews coming your way soon. And yeah, if you've got people you want to volunteer, if you want to volunteer, drop me a line and it'd be great to chat. But otherwise, take care. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll chat soon. Thanks for tuning in. If you like this episode, please pass it on to someone else who you think might enjoy it as well. And if you want to support Avid Research this year, that would be amazing. You can buy us a coffee. Head to avidresearch.com.au and there'll be a link, buy me a coffee, and you can support us with a one-off little coffee payment. Thanks so much for listening. You're a legend.